Welcome to Beat Infertility, a podcast where we get real about infertility, empower you to take back control, and provide you with hope for the future. Ready? Here's your host, fellow infertility warrior, Heather Hooman.
Welcome to episode 226. Today you'll hear the success story of a woman named Amy. She's a 37-year-old event planner who enjoys reading, going out to eat, and traveling. After a year of trying to conceive, Amy and her husband consulted a reproductive endocrinologist. Initial testing did not provide any answers. They did three unsuccessful IUIs, one of which ended in a chemical pregnancy. They moved on to three IVF cycles, which resulted in only one genetically normal embryo and three mosaics. The cycles also revealed she was a poor responder and had increasingly high FSH. They transferred the normal embryo, which resulted in a blighted ovum. After genetic counseling, they decided to transfer their mosaic embryos, all of which failed. Their doctor recommended they explore donor eggs. Although it was a challenging decision to make, they found the perfect donor and purchased eight eggs. Let's listen to how Amy and her husband ended up with one genetically normal embryo, which became their son. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather. Thank you so much for having me. This is such a pleasure.
Why don't we start off by telling everybody a little bit about you? How old are you? What do you do for a living? And what do you do for fun?
Sure. So I am actually 38 years old today. It happens to be my birthday, which is a really nice way to spend it, you know, getting to chat with you. I'm very excited. And I work actually planning fundraising events for a national nonprofit. I plan, you know, galas and golf outings. And we have one event that's a women's purse auction, lots and lots of fun. So I get to not only work on the logistics of all those types of, you know, all the background work that you don't see when you attend something. We have volunteer committees that I work with that help plan all these events. So it's a nice combination of what I enjoy, which is the organization and the you know, figuring out all the back end parts. But I also really enjoy working with people. So it's a perfect fit for me. It's a lot of fun. As far as what I like to do for fun, you know, I grew up dancing and my mom was a dance teacher. So I've been involved with performing arts for a really long time. So when I have spare time, I do like to do community theater. There's a lot in my area. I live in Philadelphia. And so I really enjoy performing. And in addition to that, you know, doing a lot of different social things with my family, you know, I really love Philadelphia. So we love to go around to different restaurants and, you know, different, you know, events going on in the area, outdoor festivals, things like that. And I also in the past have been a foster mom for a couple different litters of kittens. I work with a local animal rescue in the area and have had some kitten babies in our house a couple different times. So that was a lot of fun. And I've loved cats my whole life. So pretty neat to be able to have them when they're, you know, a couple weeks old and kind of see them grow and then get them adopted. It's a pretty special thing.
Well, I already recorded the intro to this episode, so you're going to be 37 for a little bit longer.
That's totally fine.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Think about your life before infertility. Back then, how would you describe yourself as a person?
Sure. So I would say probably very, you know, positive and upbeat is how people usually typically tend to describe me. You know, I love life and I'm always about trying to learn things and grow. You know, spend a lot of time with people. Like I would say that I am the textbook extrovert because I love being around people. I thrive from getting energy off of others. And so, you know, I really enjoy, you know, spending time. And that's how I kind of, you know, kind of my career kind of came to be and how everything came to be, you know, in my life, really. But I love spending time with family and friends and just very driven. You know, I like to be busy all the time. I pursued, you know, my master's degree a little, you know, a few years after I got my undergrad degree. You know, just try to, you know, finish everything that I start and really enjoy, really just have a love for life.
Tell me about the first time you met your husband.
Sure. So we actually met online, which is, I still think is hilarious because I never actually thought that I would have success with that. I just, it was kind of, you know, a way to be putting myself out there in hopes of meeting someone, but I would often, you know, change my mind and take down my profile and then put it back up, you know, depending on what kind of mood I was in. But, you know, it only takes one. And we met and talked, you know, for a few months. And then we had what I still consider our first date. He doesn't like to call it that because he didn't like to put labels on things. But to me, it's our first date. And I think I really knew the moment I saw him. He made this cute little face. He was coming across the street. We met up at a restaurant in Philadelphia and he kind of made this cute little face and gesture. And I was like, yep, this guy is the one. I just know it. But it took him a little longer, I think, to figure that out. He just wasn't ready. So we kind of connected for a while and then lost touch. But then in about a year or so, he did come back into my life. We, you know, have been together ever since. And it's pretty special. So I do say, you know, it's the online thing does work for some people. So I'm now a believer. That's for sure.
Today, how would you describe you and your husband as a couple?
Sure. So I think the number one thing about our relationship is that we love to laugh. You know, we always make each other laugh. We're silly. We have a lot of fun together. But I would also say, you know, I really think we bring out the best in each other too, which I think is so important. Just for example, he works for a university. He only has from, you know, many years ago, a 2-year degree. And so I had always kind of thought, you know, me, if I worked for university, I'd be getting, you know, taking classes left and right and getting, you know, all the, you know, education that I could, but that's me, right? You know, that's not necessarily him, but he, I think, has been inspired. I like to say that I was part of inspiring him to actually go back to school. And he's slowly chipping away to finish his 4-year degree. And it's exciting. It's really exciting to see him be so passionate about something because he's really loving what he's doing. I'm just so proud of him. And I hope that I had a little bit of a part, you know, in bringing that out in him. But he brings out the best in me too. You know, he's my calm place, you know, stressed out about something or just say it's been, you know, a stressful day at work. I come home and I'm really able to let go of that because he's there and he just makes me feel good. So it's a really nice balance. I think that that's, you know, really special about our relationship.
Was there a specific moment in your life when you first knew you wanted to be a mom?
That's such an interesting question. I really had to think about that. I don't think it was ever a question. I think it was always just something that I wanted. It's interesting because I was best friends with my mom always. You know, we're really, really close and she's always been an amazing cheerleader and support for me. And I always valued that relationship and thought, you know, how special it was. And so I think in my mind, I always wanted to have that someday with my future child too. And I also babysat a lot when I was a teenager and I loved that. And I especially had one family of 3 girls that I just was really close with. And they almost felt like, you know, like my children in a way. And, you know, so that I think really pushed me towards, you know, momhood as well. And it's nice because today they're all adults and 2 of them have gotten married and we're still, you know, follow each other on social media. And I just, it's amazing to see them having come full circle. And I feel kind of like a mom feeling towards them, which is really nice. But yeah, so I think it was always just something that was in the plan for me.
How did this longing to be a mom impact other big decisions in your life?
Interesting. Again, I think it was just kind of something that was always in the back of my mind. And so I will say, you know, I'm really blessed in terms of my job, you know, as an event planner, it can be, you know, different types of hours and working, you know, evenings and weekends and things like that. But I'm really blessed. I feel I only have a few events a year, so I get to most of the time have a normal 9-to-5 schedule and get to be home. You know, I think that work-life balance is hugely important. And so it wasn't really something I realized until after, you know, I was, you know, hoping to have a child and really in that moment that I was really grateful for, you know, that flexibility with my job, being able to do what I love and still be able to balance that with being a parent. And I'm also blessed actually to work in a state that mandates some fertility coverage. So I feel like when we, you know, ended up going down that road, I didn't even realize that that was going to be as fortuitous as it was. But, you know, that is definitely a blessing as well. I'm trying to think in terms of, I mean, I think I just always, you know, was driven to be as successful as I could. And, you know, like I said, in the back of my mind was definitely thinking about wanting to be able to provide for my future child, you know, what my parents were able to provide for me, you know, to send them to, you know, college and be able to give them, you know, not let them think they were wanting for anything, you know, always just being able to give them the best life possible.
Let's dive into the journey to build your family. Take us through your whole infertility timeline, starting at the beginning.
Okay, so my husband and I got married in October of 2014, and we decided we were going to first wait a year, you know, and enjoy just being married. So we started trying on our own the following October, and we tried on our own for a year and did not have success. So at that point, my OB recommended that we do see a fertility specialist. So that fall of 2016, we started to go to the clinic, you know, where we ended up being patients for a few years. And, you know, we had all the initial testing and, you know, both myself and my husband, and nothing was apparently, you know, for lack of a better word, wrong or an issue, you know, right off the bat. So our doctor recommended that we try IUI first. Our first round of IUI, actually, I ended up being pregnant, and it was, I remember this so vividly because I was in a meeting for work, a pretty casual meeting. I was at a restaurant and was sitting with a couple people, and I saw the phone number come up for the clinic. And I thought, ooh, I know that this is, you know, some kind of news about what had happened. And it was so early in the journey, and I was so naive at that point about anything related to all of this. And so I excused myself and went and answered the phone. And the nurse said, oh, I'm just calling to let you know you're pregnant. I was shocked. And so many emotions were going through my mind. First of all, I was slightly distracted, you know, by obviously being in a work meeting, but also just, I was thinking, you know, it couldn't have worked that quickly, but it just all felt very strange. Also, of course, I was excited thinking like, really, was it that easy? Like we just needed this little nudge in the right direction, you know, and I had no idea what questions to ask at that point either. And so, you know, I thanked her. I hung up the phone. I went back inside and I was obviously shaking. And our meeting was almost done. And so my coworker kind of realized something was going on, and we went to the restroom afterwards, and she asked, and I was kind of like, I'm pregnant. So I even told my coworker before I'd even told my husband, because I was in total shock. It was so early and so new. I ended up calling the nurses back and speaking to one of the nurses that I had really gotten to know and kind of asking her some more questions and what this might mean. And she said it was early, and she kind of explained the best and worst case scenarios, those kind of things. And it did turn out after a couple of days that it did end up being a chemical pregnancy. So, and it's funny because I guess I just had a feeling in the beginning, like, I don't think it's going to be this easy, but you know, so that was definitely, but it was definitely a letdown. And then we did end up trying two more rounds of IUI after that and did not have any success there. So at that point, my doctor did recommend that we move on and try IVF. It seemed like I was a good candidate for that in terms of all my different, you know, numbers and things like that. As we approached IVF, we really wanted to be sure to do PGS testing on the embryos. I know that, you know, some people choose to, some people don't, but that I had read about and done my research, and that was really important to me. I thought, you know, if we're going to go through all this, I want to see it through as far as we can, you know, and I thought the most important thing was to know, you know, whether the embryos were normal or abnormal, you know, in order to, you know, be as sure as I could before transfer that for the best chance of success. So that was something that from the beginning, our plan was whatever embryos we were able to get, we wanted to freeze them, and we did want to test them. So that was something I thought was worth mentioning. So round one of IVF that we went through, we did an antagonist protocol. We had six eggs retrieved and they were mature, five of them fertilized normally. But as of day six, we actually had no blastocysts, no embryos. That, I would say, was our first big disappointment, because I had no idea. It never crossed my mind that that could even happen. That was really hard. It was the day before an event too for work. So talk about having to kind of, you know, chin up and put on a happy face and, you know, try it while you're grieving on the inside. So, but it was also a good distraction, you know, from that. But that definitely was tough. And I think I'll say, as I went through this journey, there was so much to learn. And I don't think there was any way in some way to prepare myself for some of these things, because everyone's story is so different and things go differently for every person. So you can do as much research as you like, but I think that, you know, sometimes you just have to go through the thing as it's happening, you know. So, but that definitely was our first disappointment. So after that, our doctor did recommend round two and trying a different protocol. So we went right into a second cycle. We did an estrogen priming protocol. And as we got towards retrieval, a doctor called me and said, you know, the follicles, you seem to be developing less, you know, eggs to be retrieved at this point. And so he asked, you know, what we wanted to do. He said we could always, you know, convert this cycle to an IUI, as this, you know, protocol, you didn't seem to respond to this one. At that point, it was, you know, 48 hours before retrieval. And I said, no, I said, we're going to go for it. You know, we've come this far. I think I want to give this cycle every possible chance. So we did that. And I was very happy. I feel like that was absolutely the right decision, because we had 5 eggs retrieved that were all mature, 4 fertilized normally. And at the end of that cycle, we had 1 blastocyst, which after being PGS tested, ended up being normal. So that was really exciting. And I will never regret that decision to go through with that cycle. I'm so glad that we did. After that, you know, that little embryo was on ice, and I took a little bit of a break that summer just to take a breather. And I did do a community theater production at the time, just to, you know, do something fun and kind of get that, you know, out of my system before we did our transfer. So we started prepping for transfer that fall, and it took a couple months actually, because my progesterone levels were very high when they would test them every week or so. And so we finally got those under control, and we did that transfer. That was October of 2017. And our clinic does your blood test 9 days later. And I was pregnant, but my HCG was only at 10, level 10. So that was kind of right on the border of pretty low, not really where they like it to be. It definitely became a waiting game. And, you know, every few days they were testing, you know, my blood, and my HCG was steadily rising, which I know, you know, is what they want it to be doing. And we did end up having an ultrasound, I believe, 5 or 6 weeks, where we did see the sac. You know, we were really encouraged at that point. We were just, you know, praying the whole time that this was a little baby that could. But it did turn out that the sac ended up being empty. So that was I believe a blighted ovum is what they call that type of pregnancy. So that was definitely our second disappointment, for sure, especially because we did only have that one embryo. So we had a lot of faith and, you know, hope banked on that little one. But unfortunately, it was not meant to be. You know, at that point, and we did find out later that embryo was a son. So that was our first son. And so we decided at that point, based on finances, actually, really, to take a break until the new year, because I was very blessed to have, like I mentioned, to have some fertility coverage with my job. And I had maxed out what they typically allow. But in the new year, my plan was actually starting over. Our insurance had changed, and I was actually going to be able to start over with a whole new benefit plan. And so I was going to have another lifetime maximum to put towards treatment. So I felt like that was definitely divine intervention. And it felt like a sign that we were supposed to keep going and, you know, keep trucking through this journey. So, but, you know, in the meantime, I thought that 2 months was going to be good, you know, to not only enjoy the holidays, but to relax and kind of think about myself and, you know, what this journey was doing to me. So I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of me as well. And so I did start not only trying acupuncture, because not only did I think that, you know, was very beneficial for fertility from what I had heard, but I thought that it would really help me to relax and that I would definitely get something out of it regardless. So it's something I started and I really ended up enjoying very much. And I also started going back to see a therapist to really talk through everything that was going on. I had seen somebody, you know, in years prior and returned to her because I really had a good relationship with her. And so it was wonderful to have, you know, that time every week to talk to her about everything that was going on. So I think that those were two very beneficial things that I did as we took that break. You know, it felt like I was still moving in the right direction, you know, not just, you know, stalling, you know, is for lack of a better way to explain it. So in January then of 2018, we did our third round of IVF, and my doctor recommended we did the Lupron Flare protocol. He said at that point, he said, this is a protocol we often do for poor responders. Because at that point, it seemed that based on my different numbers during my cycles and my response to the medicines that, you know, that I was a poor responder to those, you know, stimulation medicines. And so we were hopeful that this would be more successful. So, and it seemed, you know, to be going in that direction. At that point, we had 9 eggs retrieved, 5 were mature, 4 fertilized normally. At the end of the, you know, the cycle, we had 3 blastocysts. So that was just absolutely amazing. We sent those off for testing. And when the report came back, they actually all ended up being mosaic embryos. I would say, and our journey was definitely probably what I would call rock bottom at that point in terms of disappointment, because first of all, I never even knew that that was an option. For those who might not know, if I can, you know, explain it to my best understanding, mosaic embryos have a combination of normal and abnormal cells. And the way that I was made to understand it was that sometimes those embryos can be implanted and result in a perfectly healthy baby, because perhaps the chromosomal issue was isolated to the placenta cells on the outer edge of the embryo. Or sometimes the issue will self-correct in the womb. But, you know, worst case scenario is that, you know, a mosaic embryo can very much be like an abnormal embryo and can, you know, not result in a healthy pregnancy. And what's kind of interesting is that I found all this out when we were at the, being from Philadelphia, we were at the parade celebrating the Eagles Super Bowl win. So talk about a high and then a low all on the same day. It was very intense emotionally. So that, I mean, that definitely was rock bottom at that point, because we didn't know the right answer. And I mean, I think during this process, it's hard to know the right answer. So what we, the way we, pursued it, of course, we talked to our doctor first, and he had had success so far with one patient who transferred a mosaic embryo and had a successful pregnancy. So that was definitely very encouraging. And he was willing to let us transfer, you know, once we talked to a genetic counselor, which was our next step, he was willing to most likely let us try to transfer some, if not all, of those embryos. So we felt like we had his support, which was very important. So we did talk to a genetic counselor. I feel like a lot of that is a blur, but basically they talked us through the issue that each embryo had. 2 of them were missing a piece of a chromosome. And the 3rd one actually was missing a piece and had an additional piece, I believe. And so they talked us through what that could mean in terms of each one. It was very, very thorough. And it was actually this whole concept of mosaics was kind of new to the genetic counselor too. So it was a kind of a learning, you know, experience for her as well to really do this research on those embryos and kind of what that could mean and everything. So she really, you know, walked us through all the possibilities, which was very overwhelming, but it was very important. I think having as much information as possible to make a decision on the next step was really invaluable. So once we had all that information gathered, you know, my husband and I talked, and, you know, at that point we decided we needed to take a break for a month or two, because we had really kind of forgotten who we were before this whole journey started. You know, we were so wrapped up in trying to become parents that we needed to remember all the things we loved about our lives and the things that were important to us before, you know, this happened. And I thought that would be, you know, we thought that would be the healthiest decision to make at that point. So we did take a break. Those little embryos, you know, sat on ice because they weren't going anywhere. So we took a break for about 2 months. We took a little, you know, long weekend vacation that was really good for us. I had a big event coming up in the spring. So, you know, got through that and the stress of that. In the meantime, we would talk about the situation a little bit, you know, here and there. And we ultimately decided, you know, that we wanted to give those little girls, because they were all three were female, those embryos. We wanted to give those little girls a chance. That was, you know, really important to us. So based on the recommendations of the genetic counselor and the results, our doctor thought that 2 of the 3 might be viable for transfer. The one embryo that had 2 complications, they thought probably would be too risky to transfer. So he was willing to let us try with the other 2. We did transfer each one that summer. We tried one at a time. Our clinic definitely recommends that usually. Unfortunately, neither one was successful. So it was a negative each time. So that, of course, was very heartbreaking. That was another low moment. Again, I will never regret the decision to try. Because as I said, we really firmly believe we wanted to give those little girls every chance. At that point, my doctor said, how are you feeling? What do you think you want to do? Like, talk to me. And I said, I think at this point, I'd like to do whatever it takes to bring a healthy baby into our lives. It was really important to me, however, and he knew this, that I hopefully be able to carry a pregnancy. I really wanted to experience pregnancy as well as being a mom. That was really important. And so we knew or had a good idea that when I had the chemical pregnancy, that that was a good indicator that I'd be able to carry a pregnancy. I had a feeling this was coming. And he said, I think that at this point, my suggestion would be to think about donor eggs. And so again, a whole new frontier, although it was definitely on my mind that that might possibly be the next step. Hearing it from the expert, you know, his mouth is hard because I mean, I think, as a woman, anyone who's listening can relate that it's hard to wrap your brain around your child not coming from your eggs. And you really feel like that makes them not a part of you, which, you know, I came to understand was so far from true, at least for me. But that was my initial reaction. I had a lot of fears starting out. You know, I thought, was I giving up on my own eggs too soon, you know, just to make the easier decision, the faster solution? You know, was I just taking the easy way out to go this way? I would think about that future child if we went that route. And I thought, you know, will I ever look at this baby and think that they're not really mine? I thought, would I resent my husband because this baby would have his genetic makeup but not mine? Would I blame him or the donor if there were, you know, health problems for this baby or that the baby had, you know, unappealing qualities, you know, things like that? I mean, all these things went through my mind. And a big one was, you know, will this child love me less when they find out? You know, there were so many things that went through my mind. It was really tough. And my husband and I at one point had a conversation where we were like, nope, this is not what we want to do. He said, I don't want to have a child that isn't as much yours as it is mine in terms of, you know, genetics. And we were against it. We weren't going to do it. And we were really thinking about trying another retrieval with my eggs. I didn't know what that would look like or what the protocol would be or anything, but I think that's what we thought we would talk to the doctor about. So we did go in and chat with him, and we really wanted to, I needed him to tell me the facts of my, you know, my situation again, because I think I often would kind of forget about the numbers and the science behind it. And so I needed him to kind of reiterate my situation to me and what he really recommended based on his, you know, background as a doctor. And so, you know, he was still really for the donor egg idea. A few of the points that he made were that during my prep for retrieval, my estrogen never rose above 1700 and that it should be, you know, somewhere in the 3000s during retrieval. That's what they typically like to look for. So it was always very low. My FSH numbers had steadily been rising and I was always on the highest dose of stimulation medicines. And so he kind of pointed out those few facts. And he said that I think this, you know, ultimately really points to, you know, egg quality and the fact that, you know, your eggs are just not, you know, responding to, you know, this medicine. So, and it was so interesting and it just shows the relationship that we have with our RE and, you know, how much we trust him, because after that meeting, we really had a complete 180 because of that trust for him. And we thought, you know, if that is the direction that he thinks we're going to go to be the most successful, then we really have to consider this. And it was interesting because we, you know, we were sitting in the car afterwards and kind of just both took a deep breath and kind of looked at each other like, okay, you know, what are we going to do next? And as we were talking about it, you know, my husband said, you know, I wish that it was me that had the issue. I wish I could take this away from you and how, you know, how this must hurt. And I, you know, it was so lovely that he said that and just shows, you know, the love that he has for me. But I said to him, no, I said, I would much rather that it be me, because not only would the baby not have any of your genetic makeup necessarily if the issue lied with you, but I said, you know, I really believe that if I, you know, I would be carrying this baby. So how could this baby not be a part of me, even though it did not come from my egg necessarily? There's no way that, you know, the baby absorbed my nutrients and my blood and, you know, all these things about me and would grow inside me. So I think if this had to be the next step, you know, it was the best outcome, you know, that it could be. So, but I'll always remember that he said that to me because it was just so sweet and selfless of him to say that. But so, yeah, so that's when we began the process of working towards donor eggs. And my clinic works with a particular frozen egg bank. We got, so we decided to, you know, go with what they recommended, because I know there's very many egg banks out there and we could have used any, but I didn't want to, that was just too complicated. I wanted to, you know, keep it simple, truly. That was, you know, the way I wanted to approach it. And so they gave us access to the database, you know, besides, we, you know, we sat down and talked with the nurses who are in charge of the, you know, the donor egg, you know, piece of the practice. But we, at the same time, we're exploring the egg bank's, you know, website. And just to further prove that this was the right decision, I found my donor right away, which seems crazy, but I read her profile, and the profiles are so detailed. I mean, they go into every single thing about the person's physical features, first of all, including like the width of their nostrils. Like, it gets that specific, which was so funny to me. Their full medical history, their, you know, their family's medical history. But then at the end, they answer questions about themselves, which honestly, for me, was the most important thing, because again, being, you know, someone who's a connector, I wanted to feel connected to this woman, you know, even though it was an anonymous program and I knew that I would probably never meet her. That was really important to me. And so some of her answers, I swore it was me that had answered these questions. You know, when she described her personality, the first thing she said was that she was bubbly and outgoing. She said she loved being around people, good sense of humor. She makes friends easily. About her motivation, she's very motivated and all these things. And I was like, whoa, you know, this is just, I mean, I feel like I answered these questions myself. One of the cutest things she answered, her most memorable moment was when she won her spelling bee when she was 12 years old, and how it felt to be cheered on by everyone who loved her and how proud she was of herself. And that was just so sweet, I thought, and such an innocent, lovely memory. Oh, she described how she was as a child, and she said she was very sweet and calm. She was always doing, you know, really kind things for people. And so, you know, I was like, how, those are the most beautiful traits, that if those could be passed on to my future child, I mean, how could I ever go wrong, you know? You know, she also said, you know, why she was doing this. And she said she wasn't at the time planning to have children for a while. And she had some friends that had been trying for a long time and having struggles, and she hated seeing them in pain. And she said how rewarding it would be for her to try and help someone else complete their family. And I thought, what a beautiful, beautiful reason to do this. You know, if I had been able to do the same for somebody, I would too. So just those answers, just, and I knew she was the right person. And something that also kind of helped was that you get to see pictures of the donor as a child. They don't show adult photos, but as a child. And there's a picture of her as maybe a two-year-old that looks almost exactly like one of me at the same age. It's just, it's crazy. Same haircut, same expression on our faces, same eye colors. It's just, it's amazing. So I personally really considered both of these things a sign that she was the one. I really did. And so we did end up, you know, after going through the whole process, we ended up purchasing, we did a guarantee program through this egg bank that we wanted to be sure that we would have one, at least one PGS normal embryo. That was the guarantee program that we went with. We ended up purchasing 8 of her eggs. Eight eggs came with that program. And I just really quickly just want to give a little aside to my dad, who helped us out very much financially with this whole situation, because I mean, the financial piece is huge, and we could not have done this without him. He was very helpful. So I wanted to be sure to mention him while I was chatting through this. And so out of those 8 eggs, we did at the end end up with one normal embryo. We chose not to find out the gender. Again, because we thought, if this is our baby, it doesn't matter. This little child is meant for us. It actually ended up, we were prepping for transfer, and turned out that the timing, I actually was transferring a year and a day later than when we had transferred our first son, where the sac ended up being empty. It was so interesting. It was October 3rd of 2018. Everything fell into place that day. It was so interesting. I had an acupuncture session before my transfer, and my acupuncturist, who I'd become good friends with, was wearing a shirt that I actually owned as well that said Radiate Positivity. I had worn the same shirt that day for the same reason, and she knew I had it and bought it and wore it just for me. It was very, very sweet. We had literally the dream team in the surgery center at our clinic that day. All my favorite nurses that worked back there. My doctor particularly happened to be the one on doing surgeries that day. Even the embryologist was, out of all the ones I had talked to in the past, she was my favorite. One of the most special things about my doctor is that he loved music, and he would play songs in the surgery room that had to do with the patient that he was working with. So he would play the song Amy by Pure Prairie League. So he was playing that on repeat while we were in there. The embryo actually, and this, once it was thawed out, and it had looked this way when it was frozen too, but I thought it was special that it still looked the same, kind of was in the shape of an infinity symbol, which actually is an important symbol to my husband and I. So, and we actually got to see the embryo be drawn up in the catheter. I don't think we've ever seen that on the screen before. And this was the first transfer where I actually saw the embryo on the, you know, ultrasound screen enter my uterus. I saw the flesh, as they, you know, call it. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. So, and our doctor actually was able to capture a photo, just like he would have if he was, you know, looking at a fetus in your stomach. He captured the photo of the embryo going in, which was so neat. And so all these things that fell into place, that everything felt so good, you know, after we left there that day and positive. So, you know, 9 days later, we were, you know, sitting, you know, waiting for a call, and he called around noontime, and I picked up the phone and I heard the song Amy playing over the line. And I just started to laugh, and I said, "Does that mean you have good news for us?" And my doctor said, "I have fantastic news. You are pregnant." And just the joy on both sides was huge. I mean, you could feel the smiles. And this time my HCG level was 384. So there was no mistaking that meant a pregnancy, which was amazing. And it was funny because later on, when I talked to the nurses who I'd become very close with as well, they were like, "Oh, it could be twins. That's really high." And I was like, "Whoa, mind blown, guys, slow down." But it was very sweet. So fast forward 8.5 months or so later, because my son came 3.5 weeks early, but May 25th of 2019, Gabriel William was born. I had a feeling he was going to be early because his mom's always early too. And he just was always moving and shaking in my tummy. And I had a feeling he was going to want to come out early, and he did. And I also, it was because I did have preeclampsia. I was dealing with that, but otherwise my pregnancy was perfect. I loved being pregnant. I was so blessed that I barely got sick. I was barely uncomfortable. I just loved every minute of it. Feeling him move inside me was just one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. It was amazing. And I feel like he has a fun birth story, so I will share that as well. I did get admitted to the hospital Memorial Day weekend, it ended up being, due to preeclampsia. They were trying to induce me naturally, and nothing budged overnight. And so as the doctors and nurses were kind of discussing next steps, they gave me my medicine for my blood pressure, which often when they're not letting you eat something, you know, it had made me sick before when I took it on an empty stomach. That's what ended up happening. And so I threw up, which made my water break, which, you know, made his heart rate drop. And so, you know, the nurses all rushed in. They had the doctor come in. He checked my cervix, and Gabriel's hand was coming out of my cervix. He was waving to everybody. So he was trying to come out hand first, which was hilarious. And I, being a theater person, said he was doing jazz hands because he was already ready to perform. So we had to go in, you know, emergency C-section to get him on out because he was ready. But yep, May 25th in the morning, he was born. His name Gabriel means God is my strength. And his middle name, William, is after my dad, who was such an important part of this journey. He just turned 10 months old on Wednesday, and he is our absolute greatest gift we could have ever received. So that is our very long, but very, you know, special journey to being his parents.
Hey, Infertility Warrior, it's Heather. This episode of Beat Infertility is brought to you by me. Regular listeners of the show know that I struggled during my infertility journey with everything from finding the right clinic to advocating for a protocol customized to my body, to allowing infertility to consume my entire existence and everything in between. In other words, I've been where you are. Now that I'm on the other side and have interviewed hundreds of other warriors and fertility experts, I've discovered the fastest way to realize your dream of becoming a parent is to get educated, regain hope, build resiliency, learn self-advocacy skills, and partner with someone who's been there. Whether you're an infertility newbie or a seasoned veteran, It would be my honor and privilege to provide, as one client put it, unwavering support with fully engulfing and genuine empathy. If you'd like to learn more or schedule a free 30-minute call to discuss how I can support you during your infertility journey, go to beatinfertility.co/hope. Now, back to the show. I want to start by going back much earlier in your journey. How did you end up picking your fertility clinic?
Sure. So they were actually recommended to us by my OB. And so that's, you know, why we ended up choosing to go there. And it's interesting because I never gave it a thought beyond that, you know, to start, because we immediately felt a connection there. I read up on them obviously ahead of time and their success. And but we absolutely loved our doctor right away, loved all the doctors in the practice who I, you know, saw, you know, as I went, you know, through the journey, and connected with the nurses and staff right away too, actually. I remember our very first visit there, sitting and speaking to the financial coordinator about, you know, what my insurance would cover and things like that. And at that point, you know, your mind is just full of so much information and it's so hard to process. But I remember just connecting with her immediately. She was a wonderful, you know, energetic, bubbly person. She reminded me a lot of me and was just so positive. And I thought, wow, I said, this is where we're supposed to be for this. And I had no idea how long it was going to take. I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea that I would sometimes be there 3 days a week, depending on where we were in a cycle. There's so much in the beginning. And I think that, you know, the doctors and nurses explain these things to you from a place of familiarity because they have been doing this for so long. But for new patients, I mean, it's insanely overwhelming and you really don't know what to expect. And so having that connection with all of them right off the bat was huge. That, for me, being a patient there was one of the best parts of the journey, actually. Like I said, we had such a great relationship with our doctor right off the bat. Every time I would be there, he would, my last name is Alvin, like the Chipmunks. That's my married name. And so he would always go, Alvin, like Dave Seville from the Chipmunks. On the day where we had our, I had to have a DNC, you know, when I had that, the blighted ovum. And, you know, he came in to the room, sat down next to me, put his hand on mine, you know, was so comforting and said, we're going to take care of this. We're going to, you know, move past it. And then we're going to see what we can do next, you know, to move you in the right direction to be a mom. Like, he was just always so personal. So were the nurses. I really got to know them and the staff along the way, got to be friends with them. I mean, we're all friends on social media. I invited all of those nurses to my baby shower. I, you know, told people when I was, you know, there, I was like, they're really the guests of honor. They are the ones that got me through this journey. You know, my doctor always said how positive I was throughout the whole journey and how that just astounded him. And, you know, the impact that I made on so many people there at the clinic. And so, you know, I would say, you know, the feeling was mutual because you were all such an important piece of my journey. And, you know, as I mentioned, you know, being an extrovert, I had no idea how much I was going to need that as a patient. So I think that that's some advice that I would give to somebody maybe just starting out, that your clinic, that is a really important piece because you are going to form a relationship there. You can't help but to. And if you make sure that you're 100% comfortable there and that you feel good, and if you have any doubts, do your research and try somewhere else. You don't have to stay somewhere. Always follow your heart and be sure that you feel like, you know, this is a huge journey and there's so much to it. So be sure that you feel 100% comfortable and happy.
I imagine you had a lot of fears and doubts about using a donor egg. Tell us about that.
It was a very, very tough decision. I went through in my mind so many different things. You know, I was saying, was I taking the easy way out? Was I giving up on my own eggs too soon, you know, to make a decision that was, you know, the easier or the faster decision? You know, was I going to look at this child and think they weren't really mine? You know, was I going to feel that way? Was I going to resent my husband or resent the donor if my child had any kind of illness or had any personality traits that weren't favorable. You know, was I going to place blame? And, you know, was this baby going to love me less? You know, that was a huge piece of it, thinking about the relationship there. But also, you know, it was an expensive endeavor and there was no guarantee that it was going to work. You got to hear a lot of the history of the person that was the donor. And, you know, they were as thorough as they could be, much as they would be with my eggs and, you know, as a patient. And, but again, like, just like, you know, in my situation, there were no guarantees. And so it was definitely scary. And I, you know, I will say that having that connection when I read her bio and made the choice to use her really, really helped. It was definitely not a decision I came to lightly, that's for sure.
What advice would you give to other listeners who are also considering donor eggs?
I would say, first of all, definitely have an open mind to it. Even though initially it was not something I wanted to do and I felt upset that the baby wouldn't come from my egg. And initially, you know, all about me in many ways, it was really important to have an open mind and do the research regardless to really make the most informed decision possible. For me, at least, like I mentioned, you know, feeling connected to the donor was huge and that could be different for every person. But, you know, as long as it takes, take your time and feel, if you do decide to go that route, feel the best you can about it. And if it's not the right decision for you, that's okay too. You know, don't feel badly about it. Everybody's journey is different. At the end of the day, we all have to feel good about the choice. It's such a tough choice. It's not for everybody. It definitely isn't. But, you know, ultimately follow your heart and what feels best for you. You know, talk to your partner, of course, but you ultimately, I think, have to be the one to make the decision because it's your body, what you're going through. And like I said, you have to be as comfortable with it as possible.
What was the lowest moment during your journey and how did you pick yourself back up from it?
When we found out after our final cycle with my eggs that those embryos were mosaic, because we were on such a high to finally have, you know, three embryos. Wow, like that was a huge amount to us and it felt so good and so optimistic. And then the letdown of knowing they might not be viable was huge. And also the overwhelming, you know, concept of these mosaic embryos that I had just never even knew was a possibility. It was this brand new, humongous thing. And so having to wrap our brains around that was huge. And so there was just, we had already been through so much and already gotten through so much. It felt exhausting, you know, having to make a decision about what to do next. And we wanted to, again, be as informed as possible. So that's why we talked to the genetic counselor and talked it through with the doctor and, you know, what his opinion was. And I did some research, you know, just online about others who had mosaic embryos and some had had success, some had not, but also did some scientific research. And there's not, you know, a ton out there yet about mosaic embryos. You know, scientists are still learning. That made it all feel uncertain as well, because there was no answer. There was no right answer. It really came down to what we wanted to do. And so it was mind-blowing and it was overwhelming and it hurt. It really did. And it hurt to think that just as far as we had come, that this could be the end. And at that point, we were thinking about the finances. I put a pie chart together to help us kind of decide what to do. And it was like, you know, finances and genetics and future. And oh, there were all these different, you know, pieces of this pie that I was, you know, trying to figure out the right answer. And the truth was there was no right answer, but there had to be an answer that was right for us. And so I think that because we were feeling that way, taking a break was a very, very smart decision. It was a hard decision because when you're in this, you just want a child so badly and you want to see it through till the end and you want them to be here with you. But it was the right thing to do that and have that time for self-care and to remember, you know, who we were and give ourselves that break. And so that's something I would recommend as well. Take some time off if you need to. Take a deep breath remember that self-care. Absolutely. But so that's, you know, how we really picked ourselves back up. And ultimately remembering that those were potential babies to us. We always felt with all the embryos that we had that those were our children. That's how we always approached it. And so, like I said, we had to give them every possible chance. And so I will never regret that that's the route that we went.
What about a positive moment from your journey?
Just having the relationships that I made throughout it. So it's not really one positive moment, but it's one positive outcome that came out of it. Not only the amazing relationship with the clinic, I mean, I've taken my son in to meet our doctor several times, and we go to the different locations to see the nurses, and they keep track of them on social media. And I had a great relationship with our acupuncturist, just all these people that I connected with that I never would have met if it wasn't for this journey. I really recommend to people, you know, try your best to find along this journey what gives you positive energy. For me, that is other people. And so I feel so blessed to make the connections that I did. I would have never gotten through this without them. Not only them, but my personal support system, you know, my family and friends. I mean, my best friend always has a sixth sense about when to reach out, what to say, knows the right thing to say. She's had her own struggles in the past with building her family. She was a rock for me the entire time without even needing to try. She just knew what to say. And she's Gabriel's godmother, which there was never any other choice in the matter that it would be her. So grateful for all those relationships. And I even reconnected with a good friend from high school who was going through a similar journey. All these connections, and even this wonderful woman who was selfless enough to give her eggs. I'm so grateful for her too. I'm even grateful for those four guardian angels that my son has in heaven. I mean, that's how I feel. And sometimes he kind of looks up at the ceiling and looks like he's having a conversation. I'm like, yeah, he's talking to his siblings. That's what I feel anyway. No matter what your personal beliefs are, that's kind of how I feel it is. So I am, you know, so grateful for all of those connections.
How has infertility changed you?
At first, I never doubted that this would work. In the beginning, you know, I was very naive and uninformed because it was all, you know, brand new. And so at first it was like, okay, sure, we're going to this doctor's appointment. Now we're going to do this test. And it was kind of just going through the motions of something, or just like going to a regular doctor's visit. But the further we got into it, the more discouraged I became. And that was hard for me, especially because I am really typically an optimistic, glass half full kind of person. I think at least during the journey that my positive energy became one that was more realistic. And this was definitely my first experience with grief. I feel very blessed to be able to say that, because I'm sure down the road, you know, I'll have more, but this was a big, huge thing for me. You know, there's a line from one of my favorite musicals, I don't do sadness. And that's me. Like, I actually, ever since childhood, have been really good at unintentionally kind of blocking out memories from my childhood that were hurtful or disappointing. I don't even do it consciously. It's just something that kind of happens. And I couldn't block this out. I was in it. I had to feel that sadness. I had to be in the moment. And that was really hard for me because it's not who I am. And I was always afraid. I was afraid of what the next step was going to be and that it wasn't going to work. But I was also afraid beyond that, that it was never going to work, that I was never going to be a mom, you know, and it took a while for that to hit me. But then at one point it finally did. Like, what if this doesn't have a happy ending? What if this doesn't end the way that we hope it will? And again, that was very, very hard for me, but it never made me want to stop. Those who get to that point where they want to stop, I have so much respect and admiration for, because again, you have to do what is right for you. And it's okay if that's the case. This is hard and it's a long journey and it hurts. If that's the decision you want to be able to move on with your life and to live it and be happy, that's okay. It really is. For us, I never got that far and to make that decision. You know, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't stop. And you know, I kind of took that fear and tried to turn it into something positive. I said, being a mom, you're going to be afraid for the rest of your life because you're afraid for that child's well-being all the time. You know, you want to protect them all the time, you know, so it's just, you know, being a parent is resigning yourself to being terrified for the rest of your life, but in like the best way possible. So to sum that up, there's a lot of lessons that I learned. The realities of, you know, grief, and that not everything is going to be easy, but it was a good lesson. I'm glad for those lessons looking back. Looking back, I don't think I would change anything about our journey. And that's hard to say because I don't ever want to not honor the memory of those four potential babies. But if they were here, then Gabriel wouldn't be. And I can't even imagine that because he's absolutely perfect. And he just brings me so much joy every day. So I try to, you know, always, you know, think of them and thank them for paving the way for him to be here. And I do think that they watch over him. I recently actually decided to get a tattoo to commemorate our journey. It's actually a picture of Dumbo from the Disney movie, cradled in his mom's trunk from the song Baby Mine. The tattoo artist drew four Lily of the Valley blossoms, which are my favorite flower, above his head. And one is blue and three are pink. So they represent all four of those babies. And there's a little banner that says Baby of Mine. And it's right above my heart, which is where Gabriel's head always lays. He loves to sleep on Mama. And so it's a really special commemoration of everything that we went through. And I wanted, you know, to always have all of them with me near my heart. You know, the line from the song is, rest your head close to my heart, never to part, baby of mine. And so that applies for me to all of those babies.
Even though there's nothing about your journey you would change, knowing what you know now, is there a piece of advice that you give to your past self?
I would probably say that I might ask more questions of my clinic. And that's a hard thing because sometimes you don't know what to ask because you don't know what you don't know. But I think maybe I would have tried to follow along more with what the different numbers meant, my different levels of FSH and AMH and all those different wonderful acronyms that we all get thrown at but don't actually really understand what they mean. I think I might ask more questions because when I was going through this history and answering questions for you, I thought the part that's harder for me to answer is the science behind it and that piece of my story. You know, it was so easy to talk about the relationships and the step-by-step what happened, but I don't feel like I have as much of a grasp of the medical piece of it. I think I would have asked more questions to be able to understand really what was happening with my body and what was kind of how things were going along the way. Again, like I said, you don't know what you don't know, but I think asking for my doctor to kind of be more thorough and explain things would have been helpful to, you know, have that complete picture of my journey. Again, I wouldn't really change any of the decisions we made. I still think that those were the right decisions, but it would have helped to have a clearer picture, I think. So definitely that being assertive in that way and thinking ahead to ask those questions.
What words of hope would you offer to someone who's at the beginning of their journey right now?
Take every step, one step at a time. Remember to breathe during this journey because it's a lot. You should definitely take time for yourself. Do the things that you love. There's more to you than this journey, than to being a parent. Find and hold on to those things that bring you joy. You know, keep that positive energy, whatever gives you positive energy, as best you can. Hold on to that. Find your village. For me, it was the people surrounding me. You know, maybe different for you. Maybe it's an online community that is like-minded folks who have gone through a similar journey. Or maybe your village is just your immediate family. You know, whatever that means for you, whoever can give you that support, find that and hold on to it because that's definitely what got me through. Try your best to open yourself up to that positive energy because I think that energy definitely lends itself to your success and helps you to take care of yourself, you know, while you're going through the journey as well.
Amy, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for listening to Beat Infertility. Join our free private support community at beatinfertility.co/app. If you find yourself needing additional support, visit our paid programs at beatinfertility.co hopeyou. If you'd like your story to be considered for a future episode, please fill out the form at beatinfertility.co/contact. Until next time.